It's Bigfoot Collectors Club with Bryce, Michael, and Ivy. I know a story of high strangeness or two.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back to Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson,
and our super producer,
Riley Bray.
Mm-hmm, and guess what, global community? Today we're celebrating our fifth annual 4th of July episode. That's when we dig into some stories of high strangeness that are somehow connected to the American story, whether you like it or not. That's what we're pulling from today. But we think we found a story that not only ties into American history, World War II specifically, or just, well, yeah, I guess World War II.
Yeah, for sure.
But also into the theme of BCC jet ski summer, because that's right, baby. The water is warm all summer long here on Bigfoot Collectors Club.
And we control the water with our minds.
That's right. So that's right.
It's just what we do here on the podcast.
How's everyone's aquakinesis coming along?
Pretty good. Pretty good. By the way, That water thought experiment totally failed. Do you remember when I did that rice experiment in my spare bathroom? Yes. And it was like a thought experiment where I was going to like pepper this one glass of rice with like love thoughts and pepper this other one with nothing and then pepper this other one with like hate thoughts. And it's supposed to like, you know, make the hate thought rice turn real bad, but it all just kind of stayed the same and got mucky.
You just got moldy rice, huh? That's
all ended up with. I got to work on my brain power mojo, man. It must be lax right now.
Just like the peaches that I bought from Trader Joe's. They were unripe one day and then completely moldy the next.
I bought the same goddamn peaches.
Did you get them in that box?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
got to eat Trader those Joe's. Fast. We're calling you out.
They were harder they ready, than apples.
And then they were moldy. It was like... I had the same. I literally had this conversation last night.
I love that this happened to you too, because it's really been in the back of my mind all week.
I was upset.
Feel like this is going to set the tone for our special. It's like the peach turned rotten.
Oh yeah, guys, we're getting loosey goosey this week. We're going to be honest with you. We have been busy boys. Mm-hmm. We cranked out that jet ski special for you guys. Ooh, boy. And then we got real tired. We're all about to leave for summer vacations. And you guys are listening to this when you're probably on your way to some sort of summer vacation, I
That's
hope.
Great. Love it.
Maybe you're headed to the lake this weekend for your own jet ski fun. So,
oh, yeah.
We're going to get into some classic high strangeness, but we're also, guys, let's be honest, this is going to be a little loose. It's going to be a little
We're beat.
It's summer, baby. It's all good.
Oh, my God. My wife and I will often joke, do we say I'm tired too much? I'm like, I say it all the time. I just, that's my, like, it's so true. It's like, am I supposed to be this tired today? Yes, yes, you are.
Well, you guys will be excited to hear that I'm about to hit the road tomorrow with friend of the show, W. Dave Keith, who's back in L.A. for the first time since the pandemic. We're going to drive up the coast, the West Coast. We're going to go up to, hopefully, we'll make it all the way up to Snoqualmie, Washington, where they filmed Twin Peaks. And we're going to hit the Double R Diner. We're going to hit the Twin Peaks Sheriff Station. There are other places up there that I can't think. The train car, which you guys haven't gotten to. No, the train car's in the first episode where they found Laura's, where they think the murder happened. There's a bunch
What did you say the name of the city was in Washington?
Snoqualmie, I believe is how you say it.
Snoqualmie. Wow.
It's
S-N-O-Q-U-A-L-M-I-E.
Snoqualmie.
Right. I love it. Are you going to drink coffee and rate their cherry pie?
Fuck yes. Oh, and we're going to go to the falls, the Snoqualmie Falls, and we're going to go check out the hotel, which I can't remember what the name of it is, but that's where the Great Northern Hotel, the exterior is.
Fun.
I've been there. Oh, it's so awesome.
Have you
it's
really? Have you been up there?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go on tour when you were on tour, or just for shits and giggles?
I was visiting my brother up there, and then we went on a little day trip, and it was a blast.
Killer.
Yeah. Did you feel like you could get it all done in a few hours?
The falls in the hotel?
Out? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right.
Because I think they just shot. I think they just shot. No, I didn't go to the double R. I think they just shot exteriors at that hotel. I don't think they.
Yeah, it's not. It's not the same. Yeah. The inside is clearly.
But the hikes down to the falls is great. It's beautiful. Ooh, really beautiful.
Can't wait.
Well, unlike Bryce and I, you are really committing to this Twin Peaks rewatch.
Yes. I'm telling you, it's your fulfillment, and I went all in.
Surprised? No,
not a bit. At all. Not a bit.
Boy, I mean, we're not going to get to the return until at least 2027.
Yeah. You know, for those of our listeners who don't, you know, aren't are part of our Patreon, they should be. But we were doing a Twin Peaks special, and Bryce didn't do his homework, and he was way lagging behind on watching the specials, and it was like watching Michael try to just piece together this like last minute Twin Peaks Patreon episode, but it came out great. I think,
you know, yep. What, it came out great. It's gonna be fine. Everything's fine. It's fine here. That reminds us, let's get into some clubhouse keeping. Patreon, join our BCC The Other Side, our Patreon, over at patreon.com/bigfootcollectorsclub. For just $5 a month, you'll get 3 bonus sodes every month, including our Twin Peaks recaps. We were supposed to do all of season one this past month. We just did one episode of season one.
We're taking it slow.
You know what?
Fun episodes. Well,
honestly, it's better to talk about it that way, but we'll get through it the way we get through it. And also coming up very soon this week, we will have a Bigfoot Collectors Club Expedition Bigfoot season 3 finale recap discussion with none other than cameraman Zach is going to be joining us from the show. Everyone's favorite.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait for that. Yep.
So join us over there. And of course, for $9 a month, you get you become a Cosmeteer. Riley, tell them what you get for $9 a month.
Oh, you get a lot. You get a bunch of ambient scores. There's already a backlog building up. We're also putting new ones out every week. Some weeks I'm feeling saucy. I post demos from the album I'm working on. So you get a letter that I write about whatever I'm thinking about that day. You also, if you enjoyed the songs in the Jet Ski special, those are high quality WAV files that you can download and put in your library. That is the only place you can get them. Until they are widely released.
Yes, Aquakinetic and Belly. Yeah, so yes, the Jet Ski special exclusive versions of Belly Button Up by BJ and the Shadow Bats and Aquakinetic from Club Bryce can only be downloaded over at the Ultra Terrestrial tier on patreon.com. So check and that look, out.
Yes. Look, you can sign up for the $9 tier. You go ahead and download all that stuff. If you don't like it, just go back to the $5 tier. It's cool.
Yeah,
we won't be mad at you. You
know, that's a lot of music. People do it all the time.
Yeah,
do we still plug away at this podcast for at least, I'd say, 20 times the amount of people who join our Patreon monthly for free? Yeah, we still do it. Yeah, we still
love you guys.
Yeah. We still toil away for you guys for free because we love you. So give us a little support. Speaking of showing your support for the show, you can get the all-new BCC Jet Ski Special T-shirt. Ooh. We buried the lead by James Mulholland. We finally have official merch shirts featuring, you guys wanted it, we delivered, Bigfoot on a Jet Ski. So
Bigfoot on a Jet Ski.
You can see that right now over on our Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you can get that in our T Public shop. Link to that is in our bio on Instagram and in the show notes of this episode. Finally.
I know I say this a lot, but almost every shirt, but I think this is my favorite shirt.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about the shirt. It's inspired by the Ocean Pacific designs that I grew up, Bryce and I grew up with as lads, and I'm sure Riley did too, even though he's a little
older than
us.
Yeah, a little and taste for the vintage.
Including little nods to things like TNC Surf design and the Skater Die Nintendo cartridge. So I would say check it out if you're into that stuff. James Mulholland knocked it out of the park once again. Guys, if you don't want a shirt, if you don't want to give us any money, that's fine. That's cool. Like we said, we do this for free. But please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Why? It gets the show to more listeners like you. If you do, we might read it on the air, like this one that Riley's got locked and loaded right now.
From Margarita McPee.
Yes.
Love it. Things that make you go, just found this wonderfully entertaining podcast after watching Expedition Bigfoot. Thank you guys for filling my time with things that tickle the old gray matter between my ears. 5-star.
Okay, I like this guy.
I love now that it's come full circle and people are finding us through Bryce's TV work on Expedition
Wild.
Bigfoot.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy. I love that. Well, thank you for that 5-star review. Things that make you go home.
Right. Well, let's get into this. Yep, let's just move on from that. And get into this summer's Lucy Agoosey 4th of July episode. Why don't we kick it off with some
BCC News!
Now, of course, we love to have a little bit of presidential high strangeness in every 4th of July special. And wouldn't you know, this was handed to us on a silver platter this
really
past
was.
Week. Bryce, why don't you tell us what news came down the pipeline next week?
Sure. Listeners are probably already chomping at the bit to let you know that Bill Clinton says he sent agents to Area 51 to look for aliens. That's right. Patrick Riley reports for the New York Post.
I know that there's something in there.
who is that?
That's Bill. What do you mean? It's me, Bill.
I tried practicing my Bill, and I was like, nope, not there. And I used to be there. I'm not going to do it.
I'm looking Bill. For a flying sandwich.
I'm not going to do it.
There's hoagies up there. Okay, here we go. Let's jump in.
That's George Bush.
That's Dana Carvey's George Bush. Here we go. Former President Bill Clinton admitted in a new interview that he sent federal agents to find out if aliens were hiding out at Nevada's so-called Area 51. That's right. Clinton, in a Wednesday appearance on the Late Late Night with James Corden, said while he was president, he and Chief of Staff John Podesta, quote, made every attempt to find out everything about Roswell and even sent people to Area 51 to make sure there were no aliens,
sir,
end quote.
No aliens there, sir.
The ex-president said he sent his national security advisor at the time, the late Sandy Berger, to the mysterious Nevada Air Force base, whose legacy of secrecy has spawned conspiracy theories about aliens that have made the site the center of American UFO folklore. Quote, I said we got to find out how we're going to deal with this because that's where we do a lot of our invisibility research in terms of technology, like how we fly airplanes that aren't picked up by radar and all that, end quote, Clinton said. So that's why they're so secretive. But there's no aliens that I know of.
I sent them down there to find a sandwich, and all we got was a Sandy Burger.
Hillary knows there's nothing down there. The world's leading astronomers, however, told the president a few years ago that there's up to a 95% chance that we are not alone in the universe. Quote, on the other hand, Hillary and I went to Hawaii in 2018 to the Big Island, where all the telescopes
commit
are
to
on
it, Bryce.
Top of the mountain.
Commit
right,
to
okay,
it. God. Commit. Stay in okay. it. Whatever. Even if it's wrong, commit to it.
Okay. Including the Keck telescope, which I love. It's my favorite scope up there on top of the mountain. The largest in the world. And several countries have scientific teams there, the 42nd president said. So after we toured the telescope, we went down and met with them. I said, do you guys argue about the likelihood of life in outer space? He said, yes, we have huge arguments, he said. There are those of us who think that it's 85% likely and those of us who think it's 95% likely.
Oh, my God, what a difference.
Wow, what an argument.
What a great storyteller.
Well, I think and it's 85, Bill.
I think it's 95.
It's obviously 93.
And these are people who spend their lives doing this. Okay, I'm bailing on this fucker.
No.
No, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. And I'll tell you why. This is... You know, these presidents always have a great way of just dancing around this subject for late night television. It's almost become a thing that you've got to like practice training for if you're going to be a president. How to dodge the UFO question on late night television.
I did watch that appearance. He was being really cheeky. Like, he was just joking around, really.
Yeah, this is fluff. But also, I don't think they tell him about it. Also, I think if there were aliens in Area 51, they're not there anymore. Like,
no.
That's like something that was from 40 years ago. You know what I mean? Like,
well, sure. And I may be wrong, but there's levels of top secrecy above the president. I might be wrong on that, but right. There's certain need to know, clearances.
Listen,
what
I've said this before, my buddy Dave and I, we went to Roswell a number of years ago, and our old tour guide, Dennis Balthazar, a true American.
Shout out Dennis.
Who knew everything about the Roswell incident, who drove us all around town. Now, you know, Dennis's whole thing was, why would they tell the presidents about this unless they need to know? They're only in office for as long, for a maximum of 8 years, right?
Right.
So unless something happens on their watch, the military's not going to tell them. They don't have to know. No. I think it's like in the movies. I think it's probably like, this is one time I think it's like in the movies where if something were to come hovering over our cities, that's when the Pentagon brass comes in and they go, sir, here's what we know about this. You know what I mean?
And then
the president's
course,
like, why aren't you telling me till now? And it's like, well, because you didn't need to know till now. And now you need to know.
Now you need to know. Right. Makes sense to me, man. Absolutely. I mean, it takes eight years to get a star on your lapel, right? Jeez.
Yeah. Also, I just think like Clinton was looking in the wrong place. There's no aliens at Area 51 anymore. If there are aliens in any secret bases, it's a secret base that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It's like looking for locals at a tourist spot. You know, it's not where they are.
Exactly. You know? It's like going down to Times Square and trying to find a Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Man, you know there is a secretive underground, mostly likely underground base that is the new quote unquote Area 51, and nobody knows about. Maybe there's a select few who have caught whiff of the story of where it is and what it is, but I bet it's somewhere sitting right here in the American desert. I don't know.
I bet it's in the hollow moon, which is an artificial construct.
It's in the moon!
Oh, man. All right.
Flat moon, man.
Flat moon? That's
that's the hot new thing.
Wait, is there really a new flat moon theory?
As of now, I'm sure there is.
All right.
Bray is a plant. He's trying to discredit Flat Moon.
You shill. You 4th of July special shill. All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, it's time for this week's Patriotic Story of High Strangeness. All right, everybody. We're back for a very loosey, goosey, hot dog episode. For the guys, real quick, before we get into
it's a hot dog
this,
episode.
Yeah.
4th of July, go to snacks or meals. What are you eating on the 4th?
Ooh. Okay. I make this. Oh, go ahead, Riley. Go ahead.
No, please. By all means.
All right. I have this. Okay, it's a vegan dog, but I'm only going to make a vegan dog so my wife and my friggin' kids will eat it. Otherwise, I'm just, you know, cooking for myself. But I do it on a night. Trader Joe's have these nice brioche hot dog buns, and I do one of their little smart buns on that. If they've got it, a little, they have this pickle mustard, but if not, just regular deli mustard will do, or yellow mustard. And then they have these sweet jalapeno slices, and I put those on top of the mustard. Bing, bang, boom. That is the best tasting hot dog you'll ever have. People who put ketchup on their hot dog should be shamed. It's wrong. Mustard only hot dog.
Yeah, mustard relish. Mustard relish.
Mustard relish is fine. Relish is totally acceptable.
No ketchup on a hot dog. That's for preschoolers and under.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Yes. Taking a stand here on the BCC.
Preschool and under ketchup on hot dog.
Yeah.
Dorks.
How about you guys? What's your go-to July 4th snack or food item?
I mean, I'm really big on the old veggie chili. That's like that and like
chili in summertime.
Oh, chili cookout, man. 4th of July chili. It's like a whole thing. And then you get the Fritos scoops, not necessarily Fritos brand. Mm-hmm. Actually, since this episode is sponsored by Trader Joe's at this point, the Trader Joe's corn chip organic scoops, really
those
great.
Are good. Those are good.
Although they're vegan chili, not my favorite version. I like the Annie's spicy, low sodium. That's the go. Yeah. Hard to find.
We said our 4th of July foods are so vegan chili. I like a vegan hot dog with a deli mustard. And from Trader Joe's has these wonderful sweet and spicy jalapenos.
There is this French little French shop at the farmer's market at the Grove that has really good Dijon mustard.
I know the place you're talking about. Butts and bowls. Come on, it's Budweiser's butts and fucking bowls.
What's butts and bowls?
That's when you call it cigarettes. Butts.
Oh, I thought you meant like butts. Like
That works too. Did I ever tell you the time I was on Sunset Boulevard looking through Naughty Dirty magazines and I fell for
it? Nope. But now is the time.
You're telling us now.
And an old friend came up and she was wait.
Hey. No. Don't jump to the end. Set the stage. Give us some build. Give us some setup. And then, tell us the story.
Yeah. Well, it was a girl I knew.
Where were you? What kind of magazines were you looking at?
Sunset Boulevard.
Up the moment before.
Well, you know, there was a Sunset Boulevard magazine stand and they had a great, you know, dirty magazine.
You know what you were looking at. What were you looking for?
It was a butt man. It was a butt man magazine.
Classic butt man.
And she came over. She's like, Bryce? And I was like, oh, hey. And I turned to her and she saw the butt man. She looked up at me and she didn't know what to say. And I was just, I don't remember what happened next, but.
He blacked out at that point.
Probably I blacked out.
Well, we all know where Bryce's allegiances lie.
Anyway, I don't know what that has to do with the
Were you flipping
July, but...
through the butt man? Or were you, or were you paying for it? Were you in the,
no,
in the transaction of
it? No, I wasn't going to buy it. I was perusing.
Aren't they all poly-bagged? Aren't they bagged in the 90s?
It was a different time.
Yeah, it was a different time. Jesus, this was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a phone back then, people.
Come on.
No, you had your pager.
You got your pornography from a newsstand on Sunset Boulevard.
And then I hid it in the forest.
Like a decent gentleman.
Oh, boy.
Well, what's your favorite 4th of July snack, Michael?
Well, I was going to say my dad used to throw, I guess it was in the summertime, my dad used to throw chili parties for like all of his coworkers. But then they would I realized as I got older, I was like, wait a minute. The chili parties were just an excuse to get people to come out and build fences for him. Because, like, I remember we built a fence and my dad threw a chili party and then he made everyone perform manual labor and build our backyard fence. And that was big summer gathering.
Wow.
Yeah. My dad.
It's diabolical.
Real Tom Sawyer of
of
Kansas City. I'm a burger and brats guy, baby. I like the old traditional. I'm a meat eater still, and I speak for the rest of us
when I say, me too.
Give me that burger, no cheese. Sorry, I'm not a cheeseburger guy. I used to be, can't do it anymore. Cheese makes my tummy feel bad. And so I'm still a sensitive boy.
You had us, and then you lost us.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm a burger
You were right there.
I like a burger.
You let it slip from your hands.
Listen, I got to be honest. I lost my sunglasses on the Chevrolet trip. You guys know this.
Oh, yes, you never found them?
I never found them. And then I bought a new pair online, and I had to tell. These were a gift. They were special Star Wars-themed sunglasses. I think they fell out of the car when Bryce and I were driving back. I don't know what happened to them. My girlfriend gave them to me for Christmas. I love them dearly. And poor Bryce. I came back. I looked for it in his car. I had Riley looking all over the cabin. Mm-hmm. And I bought a new pair. And I was never going to hide it. But I was like, she was over the other day. And I was like, I have something to tell you. And then I told her I lost the sunglasses and I ordered a new pair, but I couldn't pass them off because I'm an honest boy. And then I had been so stressed about this for 2 weeks. And then she was like, did you think I was going to get upset about this? And I was like, I don't know. I just felt I was disappointed in myself, and I thought you would be disappointed in me too.
Nice.
So it all worked nice. Out. Thanks for looking. That's my way of saying I always tell the truth. I always tell the truth. All right.
I like that.
Speaking of the truth.
Yes. Let's get to the bottom of it.
We are once again trying to find out what's really going out there in the world and examining classic stories of high strangeness. And this month, we are finally getting to a subject which in 5 years, we've only hinted about. We've only talked about on our Bullshit and Believe It list. Now, this is a bigger topic than what we're getting to today. We're going to narrow in on one of the subjects related to this topic, but I think it will, it could branch out. But this is just one of the many stories involving this area. So why don't you sit back and get ready for this. On December 5th, 1945, five General Motors TBM Avenger bombers departed from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and flew out over the Bermuda Triangle for a training bombing mission. They never returned. Almost 77 years later, the planes and their 14 crew members that vanished have still not been accounted for. Was this an instance of a routine mission gone terribly wrong? Or were these American bombers plucked out of this dimension by the mysterious forces of the Bermuda Triangle? Put out your sparklers in a bucket of water and grab a hot dog, vegan or otherwise, patriots, because it's time to discuss the disappearance of Flight 19.
How could five bombers, each with its own crew and radio facilities, disappear from the face of the earth without even flashing a single message of explanation?
That's a question author George Sand asked in his 1952 Fate magazine article, Sea Mystery at Our Back Door.
Yes.
And one that has remained unanswered since 1945. The article was the second known story to propose that there was some sort of mystery taking place in the North Atlantic Ocean, in an area that triangulated between Miami, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda. However, the mysterious region wouldn't get its nickname until 1964, when author Vincent Gladys coined the term for the first time in his article for Argosy magazine called The Deadly Bermuda Triangle. In both instances, Sand and Gladys made the case for an area of the ocean where planes and ships disappeared without explanation. And the most famous of those instances was that of the disappearance of Flight 19. Now, real quick, I want to interject with a couple notes. The Bermuda Triangle is also known as the Devil's Triangle. And I want to remind our listeners that this was the story... The Fate magazine story in 1952 was what got our dear friend Albert K. Bender into the UFO phenomenon, into the weird stuff, and led him down the path to the Men in Black. So if you listen to our Men in Black three-parter, this is sort of a tag back to the story that infatuated Albert K. Bender.
And I can see why. It's an incredible story. Flight 19 was not a commercial flight. Rather, it was a collective of five Avenger bombers that were flying a routine mission on December 5th, 1945. In fact, that was the 19th one that day, hence the title Flight 19. Now, the flight crew was supervised by U.S. Navy Lieutenant Charles Carroll Taylor. Lieutenant Taylor, who was coaching four other planes, a trainee who was leading the group across the North Atlantic for a training mission that departed from a naval air station in Fort Lauderdale. Taylor was a World War II vet, and an experienced one at that. He flew several combat missions in the Pacific Theater, and this flight should have been a walk in the park for him. The rest of the crew consisted of three men to a plane, with the exception of one bomber that only carried two men.
Also, an army man whose middle name is Carol, you know he's tough.
He's a tough mofo. Now, from what I read, he had about like 3,000 flight hours, where everyone else he was training had about 300. So he'd been through it, man.
Yeah, now, and he was flying up with these guys, and he would sort of, I think they're flying in sort of a V formation, and he'd be off to the right or the left. and he'd let a trainee lead the flight, and he'd be over the radio going, now do this, don't do that, you know, and they were just going out, basically, Riley, going out and bombing targets out in sort of like out in these little areas out in the North Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida.
Yeah, they call it this place called the Hens and Chicken Shoals. Now, their exercise was 3 hours, and it was called, get this, navigation problem number one.
that is right. I don't know if that's a Club Bryce track, but that is for sure an ambient track written by Riley in his special feelings corner.
Yeah. So they would send the bombers out east about 100 miles, and then from there, the bombers would head north to Brand, Bahama Island, before turning left back southeast for the naval base. Pretty relatively easy mission.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to go bomb the Hens and Chicken Shoals, and then we're going to go north, and then we're going to triangulate back to Fort Lauderdale. Hey, they were flying in a triangle.
That's right, Michael. The three legs of the Bermuda Triangle. You got Puerto Rico there, Fort Lauderdale, and right up into Bahama. Now, of course, we know that plan didn't end up happening. Something went horribly wrong. At first, everything seemed to be going smoothly. In fact, Taylor and his men swooped over Hens and Chicken Shoals, delivered their payload around 2:30 in the afternoon, and that's when the men headed north. That something happened, and they became lost. Now, we know bad weather started rolling in, high winds and rains, and suddenly the pilots had become disoriented. As a matter of fact, Lieutenant Taylor reported back to base that his compass was not working.
Yeah, that happened a little bit later in this story. So first, there's another naval flight instructor who was flying near the Florida coast, Lieutenant Robert F. Cox. And he received a radio call from one of the lost pilots that went like this.
I don't know where we are. We must have got lost after that last turn.
So Cox then alerts the Naval Air Station back in Fort Lauderdale, and they radioed back to Lieutenant Taylor. And that's when Taylor radioed back to base that both of his compasses were malfunctioning. In fact, Taylor said they were spinning wildly.
Spinning wildly. That's the type of shit you see in, like, movies. Now, what I imagine they have, of course, their main compass and then, what, a backup compass or something. But I would imagine each plane had at least two compasses intact. I wonder if they were all doing that, you know?
Yeah, they weren't working. Here's his quote back to base right here.
Yeah, both my compasses are out, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm over land, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down.
Now, sadly, Taylor probably misidentified which islands he was looking at. His claim that he was flying over the Florida Keys was perplexing. That would put him hundreds of miles off course in a relatively short amount of time. Now, if you're looking at the map, the Keys are southwest of the tip of the Florida, like heading out into the Gulf Coast. So, of course, now this is all speculation because we don't really know exactly what happened, but some have speculated that Taylor was actually seeing the Bahamas, not the Keys. But believing he was now over the Gulf of Mexico, Taylor started flying his men northeast, hoping to hit the Florida Peninsula. This, of course, only flew them further off their course.
So crazy. And who's to say, as we'll discuss, I'm sure, a little bit later, going over some theories, who's to say he didn't jump distance in a matter of seconds?
That well, Bryce, of course you'd want to jump right there, because, again, cutting right to the third act twist. But yeah.
We'll get to triangle that. Storytelling.
We'll tell.
Now, the other pilots warping right to the end of the story.
The other pilots were confused as well. One of them was heard over the radio saying,
"Damn it, if we just fly west, we could get home."
Now, eventually, Taylor course corrected and did head back west, but then became convinced once again that he was still somehow lost over the Gulf of Mexico. He was convinced that he also hadn't flown far enough east, and he headed back east again. A total disaster. Now, weather was getting worse, it was growing dark, and the planes were both missing and running low on fuel. Taylor braced his men for a potential crash.
"All planes, close up tight. We'll have to ditch in less landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, We all go down together.
That is such a fucking creepy transmission to overhear.
Dude.
That's what sucks. So, just the idea of like, we're all going to go down together. And people were like, why didn't the trainees, because they started to question it. They're like, no, we don't. We think we're over here still. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're flying further out east over the Pacific Ocean when he thinks they're going to hit Florida. And people were like, why didn't they all just fly back west? And it's just because they couldn't break rank. They had to fly. They were
military discipline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, crazy. Well, 7:30 p.m. on the night of December 5th, a search party was sent out in the form of two PBR Mariner flying boats. And, well, guess what happened to those?
They vanished.
Yeah, yeah. You kid, but, you know, they did. One of the rescue Mariners disappeared 20 minutes into the flight along with its 13 crew members.
So the one of the rescue boats also vanishes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them said that, you know, I guess the accepted theory is, you know, those old seaplanes, they called them flying gas tanks because they always had trouble. But I mean, what are the odds that this thing go? I guess it's possible that
they thought it exploded.
Looking for flight 19, that it just somehow exploded minutes after takeoff. And I guess, in fact, they did. There was a passing merchant ship which spotted a fireball and found evidence of an oil slick in the ocean. So
there's some evidence that Mariner exploded. But how tragic is that? So 13, almost the same amount of people are lost trying to find these 14 guys. I mean, this is just so sad and so crazy. So the next morning, or I think even early, you know, early in the morning that night, 300 ships and planes were sent out searching for remains, but flight 19 was never found.
Mm-hmm.
This is a quote from Navy Lieutenant David White, who said,
"They just vanished. We had hundreds of planes out looking, and we searched over land and water for days, and nobody ever found the bodies or any debris." The official Navy Board of Investigation came up clueless, and they thought that, you know, okay, maybe Taylor had confused the Bahamas for the Florida Keys and his compasses malfunctioned, but they couldn't honestly figure out what happened to Flight 19. And the official explanation for its disappearance was, quote, causes or reasons unknown, end quote. So ever since then, you know, we've started getting these stories of the Bermuda Triangle being a location where stuff disappears. And in fact, there is a history of other ships and planes. There was a USS Cyclops in April 15th, 1918. The vessel disappeared with her entire crew of 300 near Barbados. It lost one of the mysteries of the sea. No trace was ever found of that. There's another boat called the Witchcraft, which was lost. And there are numerous flights and things that have gone down in this area. And some argue, well, there's really no more ships or planes are crashing here or going vanishing here than in other parts of the ocean. But there is something strange about this area. And one of the big things that keeps coming up is that compasses tend to get really wonky in this area, and there might be some sort of magnetic disturbance. There's a lot of fun stuff that comes up in here. So let's talk about some fun facts involved with Flight 19 and the Bermuda Triangle area, Bryce.
Yeah, sure. Well, you guys have probably seen it, but the famous film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, in the film's opening in the film's opening, the aircrafts are discovered in the Sonoran Desert in pristine condition with fuel tanks intact, one of several mysterious events that imply extraterrestrial activity. In the film's ending scene, the crew return to Earth from the alien mothership, seemingly the same age as their disappearance.
There's a lot of thoughts that aliens abducted these guys and they didn't know what was happening. Wasn't there a strange...
Right. Wasn't it Wonder Woman too? Didn't they? Wasn't that the Chris Evans thing, Flight 19, right? Like he was... Or maybe not.
No, I don't think so. No. He disappeared in World War One, Bryce. And then he came back. Then he came back after Wonder Woman made a magical wish that he would come back to life, and he dropped into somebody's body. And then he, in that other man's body, had sex with Wonder Woman, basically stating that Wonder Woman had non-consensual this man had non-consensual sex with Wonder Woman.
Whoa. Open the wrong can of worms there.
Yeah, you did. A lot of problems. Wonder Woman 84, very problematic well, film.
You know, I want to point some earlier events taking place in the Bermuda Triangle, because man, it is a pretty storied place, that whole area. In fact, you know, there's an old tale that Christopher Columbus had recorded that while sailing to the New World, and, you know, obviously through what is now known as the Bermuda Triangle, he described getting these bizarre compass readings. And get this, he was even witness to strange and mysterious lights in the sky.
Yep.
UFOs, perhaps?
And they saw UFOs coming out of the water in parts of their travels as well. But yeah, they saw red and yellow lights hovering above in the skies in this area. So there's sort of like, he saw mermaids. Well, he saw ugly mermaids and he saw UFOs.
That's right. Even Charles Lindbergh, attempting to fly the old Spirit of St. Louis from Cuba to Florida in 1928, reported that while passing through the area, his compass began spinning out of control. And, you know, like you said, Mike, the list of strange disappearances have been pretty steady ever since. Thousands of planes, ships, and boats have mysteriously vanished. No warnings, no distress calls, and no wreckage. In fact, the sailors in the shipyards off the coast of Florida are filled with stories of close calls and strange happenings in the Triangle. And theories are abound. Everything from cosmic time warps to giant sea monsters, a tear in the fabric of space-time, to yes, even alien interference and abduction. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I like the idea that it's I remember when I was a kid, I saw a special that that the Bermuda Triangle is where Atlantis actually was, where Atlantis sank.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some giant old school ancient civilization technology. There was some weapon, some magnetic weapon that was dragging all the ships and planes down under the water.
Mm, yeah, I don't think they ever found that big magnet. One of your old toys in the toy box that has a battery in it, and every now and then it chimes in, you know, and you're like, maybe that's like the tech at Atlantis underneath the ocean.
Yeah.
And every now and then it just goes a little crazy. Oh my God. You know, you're not far off, because there was this crazy structure in the Gulf of Mexico on the east coast of Florida called the Bimini Road. And it was discovered in 1968. And, you know, scientists are still sort of arguing over if this is a naturally formed sort of road or barrier. But a lot of people, and divers especially, who go down there say this is man-made. This is some sort of a road. And could it be a road from lost Atlantis? You know, Edgar Cayce, the famed sleeping prophet, had so many thoughts and ideas and readings about Atlantis. He wrote a whole book on the subject, but he was convinced that it lies somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, that it was buried under the sea. And, you know, maybe there's something to this idea. Come on.
Just figurative fuck.
It's like right there.
Thursday.
Hell yeah. Man, pretty good stuff.
What's the electronic fog bank theory?
Yeah, so the electronic fog bank theory is this idea that there seems to be this fog that holds some type of electromagnetic current or power, and when ships or vessels sail in or fly into it, it can screw up their navigation systems and wreak all kinds of havoc. Now, is this some type of, you know, uncategorized natural phenomena, this electronic fog bank, or is it something more of the paranormal variety? Is it a sentient fog bank? But a lot of films are sort of based on this idea of a creeping, nefarious fog.
I like this guy, Bruce Gernon, who wrote a book about electronic fog. Just do our listeners a favor and read the blurb about that he wrote about his book, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle, True Encounters with Electronic Fog. Again, wait a minute. Riley, do we now have the birth of a fourth BCC band, which is your ambient sound project called Electronic Fog? And the first track is Navigation Problem Number One.
Oh
yeah, I know what I'm doing tonight when we finish recording.
We're like,
I'll tell you that.
Electronic Fog is absolutely the name of your ambient solo project.
Yeah,
100%.
We're like Empire. We're like forming companies and record labels and bands. This is great. Electronic Fog. I'm into it. Yeah, so check out this guy's book. I ordered it too because after reading this, I had to.
I love that you start out by going, "What's this all about?" And you're like, "Buy now. Click buy now, Don. Click buy now, Don.
Don, what's your password? Add to cart. Buy now." No, I don't care about what else is on the list. Just get this now. Okay, I'm Bruce Gernon. And I flew through the heart of the Bermuda Triangle before I even heard the term.
Pause. Riley, sample all of this for your track Navigation Problem Number One, okay? Just sample this. Start over, Bryce.
Sure.
I'm Bruce Gernon, and I flew through the heart of the Bermuda Triangle before I'd even heard the term. Skeptics have dismissed the triangle as a non-mystery, but they weren't in my airplane when the fog surrounded my craft and I leaped ahead 100 miles. I documented what happened and memorized every detail of that flight. Now, I'm ready to explain that there is no Bermuda Triangle. Instead, there is a continuing mystery that has resulted in thousands of disappearances of crafts and loss of life over decades and centuries, a phenomenon I call electronic fog. In Beyond the Bermuda Triangle, Rob McGregor and I present multiple cases of pilots and others who have experienced electronic fog in the air, in the water, and on land. We also examine UFO and USO cases and their possible relationship with space-time warps. Among the fascinating topics we explore are time travel and teleportation, lost crafts including Flight 19, the Dragon's Triangle, the underwater Area 51, the man who's building a warp drive, and a remote viewer who takes on the triangle.
So now that man building a warp drive is me, and yes, it's in my garage.
And I love how he goes from, there is no Bermuda Triangle, it's something just known as this, but then there's also aliens, lost crafts, underwater bases, and it's like, well, wait, you can't.
Yeah, hold on a second.
Can't get it both ways there, Bruce. But he does.
This electronic fog theory actually kind of tracks for me. I mean, aside from like that it's sentient and warp drives and all that stuff, because there's definitely recorded instances of electromagnetic interference from heavy weather, right? Mm. That's like a normal thing we all know about, is it not?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too. So and there was bad weather that day.
But right. I don't know if there's anything known as electronic fog. I'm going to actually put it in the old.
I mean,
Google
there is
art.
Now, and you can find it on patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club.
Yeah, on the cosmic deer.
Yeah, no, there's no nothing to science known as electronic fog.
But just the idea of a weather-based electromagnetic disturbance. That's scrambling instruments and throwing off like compasses and things like that seems like something I could wrap my head around.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
No, we don't need the science to know that to believe in it. That just that checks out 100%.
We know clouds. That's when science. Clouds like, get yeah, low. Yeah. When clouds get low, they like to mess up your machines. That's how I understand it.
It's like when you're dragging your socks on the hardwood floor and then you touch a balloon. It's there. We all know it.
The science.
Bermuda Triangle.
The science backs it up. Well, that is the story, the tragic story of Flight 19. And people have been looking for these planes for 77 years and nothing's turned up yet. And one of the things they did mention that they were so perplexed by is that the buoyancy of the metal in these planes, they should have actually floated and not sank. And that's another thing that comes up. Now, I don't know how much of that is based in actual facts, but there you go. What's out there in the Bermuda Triangle? And what have they done to our boys in uniform?
It is weird they never found any wreckage or anything at all.
Nothing. I mean, a lot of that stuff could be buried in the Everglades, you know, if they did make it back. But I think they probably ended up just flying so far out, you know, east, northeast, that they ran out of gas and fell in the ocean. And then
what an awful way to die, man.
No fucking shit. Tragic. But a strange story nonetheless, and the gateway into the Bermuda Triangle, I'm sure it's a subject that we will unpack in further detail in the future.
Absolutely.
So there you go. Riley, Bermuda Triangle, bullshit or believe it?
I mean, there's a lot of ships and planes and craft have disappeared there, right? So you have to believe something's going on.
Maybe not as much. I mean, maybe just as much as anywhere else. But
now, when you mention that, is that you mentioned that in The High Strangeness, that it's just like
they've done studies and they're like, it's not any more or less than anywhere else. It's just gotten this. I think because of Flight 19 and some of these other stories, you know, that were written in Fate Magazine and Argosy, it's just gotten a lot of attention. You know what I mean? But it may not actually be any more or less than anywhere else in the world.
And it's also like a high traffic area in general because it's between all of these points of ports.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, Lieutenant Taylor did, there is on record, he did report that he didn't want to take that flight test out that morning. He had a bad premonition, but, you know, his commanding officer told him to get his ass in the plane anyway, and he did. But he had a looming feeling. And as we all know, when you get that feeling in your gut, you need to listen to it.
Bryce throwing in a last minute psychic message, the tail end of this story. But that's right. Fascinating.
That's it.
All right. Well, that wraps up our story of Flight 19 and this week's episode and this year's 5th annual 4th of July celebration. Grab a vegan dog, go hang out with your family. We will remember to get your BCC Jet Ski special shirts, which will be in the shop. Now, next week, we will be taking a bit of a break, but we have a Patreon unlock for you guys. So if you're not a Patreon member, you'll hear something new. And then we're going to be back kicking ass for the rest of the summer. We got some really, really cool stuff planned. We've got some big things in development for Bigfoot Collectors Club itself that we're excited to talk about and announce, but we can't quite yet. It's the year of fulfillment, guys, and summer really, even though it's 4th of July, it's just getting started. So stay with us. In the meantime, follow us at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram, at Bigfoot Pod on Twitter. I'm at McMills on Instagram. Bryce is Mr. Bryce Johnson. Riley is at Peace Drone. We are all, at this point, should all be on Cameo. If you guys want some special FaceTime messages from us boys, we can set that up. Anything else? Oh, check out my podcast, Slate Your Name. I just currently wrapped up season one. 16 episodes are waiting for you. Awesome interviews with fun people in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry. Boys, anything you guys want to plug?
That's it. You go.
Yeah. Just, you know, join the Patreon. Yeah. You know, you'll like it. It's good. Yeah. You'll enjoy it. Yeah.
Join the Patreon.
All right, let's go watch some fireworks, everybody. Until next time, good night.
And go get regressed.
Happy 4th of July.
8-Foot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray and Michael McMillan and scored and engineered by Riley Bray. Our theme song, Come Alone, is by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. Do us a favor and support the show and unlock 3 bonus episodes every month by becoming a member of our Patreon, BCC The Other Side, which can be found at patreon.com/BigfootCollectorsClub.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.